On this edition of the Riabu podcast with Simon Littlewood and Mark Lowdy. You can hear us chuckling away already.
Good morning, Mark. It's great to be here.
And it's great to have you, Simon. And the reason we're chuckling away is because this story is about to go out on the Riabu website. It concerns a UK construction company called John Sisk & Son, which has just recently been kicked out of the prompt payment code, which is administered for the government in the UK by the Chartered Institute of Credit Management. And the reason they've been kicked out is because apparently they did not meet the payment terms set out by the code. Sisk was among the slowest 10 payers in a certain analysis of payment data. So the question here, of course, is why did they not pay? And according to the story, which once again you can read on the Riabu website, Stephen Bocott, the chief executive, says that late payments make up just 15% of the business. But the real reason why people get paid late is because of their invoices. He says, with our major invoices from major businesses, we pay 95% of them within 60 days. The problem with the small invoices that come from further down the supply chain is that they have to match with a ticket. And if they're filled out incorrectly or don't match, then we have to reject them, which brings it outside the 60-day payment term. Mm. So broadening this conversation to, well, virtually every company in the world, Simon, you do have some sympathy for people like Stephen Bocott, who would like to pay on time but simply can't if their paperwork's not done correctly.
Yes, I mean, this is the way the game is played. You know, we have a code, we will abide by it, but unfortunately you've not provided us with a transaction that we can complete, yes? We've talked about this many, many, many times. If you are exigent about what you require from your supplier...
Exigent meaning?
Very demanding, and you add little wrinkles that maybe they're not used to. Like in this case, he calls it a ticket. It's sometimes called a paragon slip, mm-hmm. which, if I do not miss my guess, requires your truck driver, if you're a supplier, when you deliver something, to get an alphanumeric slip that is generated by your customer and is unique. Take it, record it on the delivery note, get a signature, and then make sure that gets back to your head office so that the invoice that is sent to the customer carries that alphanumeric code on it. If it doesn't, it will be rejected outright. Mm-hmm. That might sound simple, but if you're a very large company and you're supplying all over a geography, you might well be subcontracting your delivery, for example, to other drivers. You might well, particularly in the construction industry, you might be using subcontractors who are doing stuff. That's very common.
Yes.
Who are doing stuff and who are, you know, they're a truck driver or they're a digger operator. They're not an expert in going in and getting the paperwork assembled. And this is, I don't want to use the word deliberate, but let's just say that a large construction company is not unaware of the difficulties that smaller companies are going to have putting together this kind of bureaucratic complexity. Mm. And of course, what it does is, you know, even assuming that they are very keen to pay everything on time within 60 days, it might provide them with difficulties in terms of invoice matching, which is essentially what he's saying. Yeah.
Yes. But isn't there, again, just broadening the conversation because we're not making any allegations or insinuations, but, you know, the fact of the matter is that it's also a huge hassle for companies, isn't it, to have to then go back and do the paperwork and the invoice doesn't have this paragon number on it or they haven't got the right stamp on it or the right chop on it, whatever. Isn't that worth... Rather, doesn't that cost more than it's worth?
Well, it does. I think that you've got to look at two things here. You know, cash flow is binary for some businesses, particularly in the construction industry, where the rate of insolvency is higher than almost any other industry. That is, particularly smaller companies are constantly going out of business. Why do they go out of business? For working capital reasons. Mm. They can't pay their suppliers, so they start up again when they can. You might sign a code, you might have the greatest of intentions, but the fact of the matter is you may simply lack the resources to be able to meet the conditions that you've agreed to. Yeah, so I think you need to understand that. It's not necessarily a question of ill will; it's a question of survival. Sometimes, I think the other thing is, and we talked about this many times, leaving aside the issue of companies that are potentially insolvent, and there are many in the construction industry that are constantly teetering on the brink. Yes, it's true that in our view, and in most cases, if you're invoicing a major company and you're a supplier of whatever size, if you take good care to understand what their expectations are and ensure that you meet them precisely, you're going to make it much harder for them to pay you late. You won't make it impossible for them to pay you late, but you can make it much harder for them to pay you late. And our advice to companies is essentially to assume, not to assume malice, to assume that it is because there is some kind of error, and to eliminate the errors. If having eliminated the errors and having ensured that you're delivering a precisely accurate invoice with the ticket number, as requested here by, then you get onto another issue, which is making sure that the terms are agreed. But according to this gentleman, he pays 95% of his invoices within 60 days. So
why did he get kicked out of the code? I guess is the,
I could say a couple of things here. It's interesting because I've been writing about government codes and about the fact that many suppliers to the UK government that have breached supplier regulations of one kind or another continue to get contracts from the UK government. So the code is advisory, okay? Mm. You need to be careful. And if you have the right political connections, and big construction companies are very closely connected with the incumbent government in the UK, it's very unlikely that the government is going to interfere in your business, yeah?
Yes.
So I think you have to be careful that an advisory code, you know, whilst it might sound good, which lacks teeth, is not necessarily going to have a significant impact on behaviour, although it plays very well.
Yes, yeah. It makes you look great as a government to be making these sort of rules.
Yes.
All right, so read the story and add your comments. If you're in the construction business, then maybe you'd like to tell us what your experience has been, particularly in Asia, where we haven't seen any such government codes.
Australia, of course, which is not really... They consider themselves to be in Asia.
A Western country in the Asian sphere.
Yeah, is what I mean. They're very into this kind of thing, and they're developing codes like this all the time.
Yes, which, in fact, is the subject of our next podcast.
Excellent.
Thank you, Simon. See you shortly.